The God of Miracles, an exegetical examination of God's action in the world. See John Collins, Crossway 2000, 192 pages. A brief book summary from Books at a Glance. About the author. C. John Collins is a renowned teacher and author who has studied extensively in the areas of linguistics, biblical studies, and the relationship between science and faith. Introduction. In this book, C. John Collins examines the biblical data concerning natural cause and effect relationships and the miraculous supernatural workings of God. He critiques different theological models of providence and supernaturalism on philosophical, theological, and exegetical lines. Collins is very concerned with proper exegesis and believes that the Bible's teaching on this subject has not been as carefully studied as it should have been. He presents a case for God's supernatural, i.e., miraculous, intervention in the world, examines criteria that can be used to identify a supernatural as opposed to natural cause, and responds to objections. Table of Contents. Chapter 1. Introduction. Chapter 2. Summary of Positions, Models for God in the Creation. Chapter 3. The Options Within Traditional Christian Theism, Presented and Contrasted. Chapter 4. Some Hermeneutical Ground Rules. Chapter 5. Passages Dealing with Nature and Cause. Chapter 6. Special Divine Action. Chapter 7. Passages That Seem to Support Occasionalism or Providentialism, Evaluated in Light of Their Communicative Purpose. Chapter 8. Evaluation of Rival Views. Chapter 9. Theological Conclusions. Chapter 10. Is the Biblical Picture Viable Today? Chapter 11. Origins, Intelligent Design, and God of the Gaps. Chapter 1. Introduction. The issues regarding the possibility and actuality of God's activity in the world have been well canvassed in theology, philosophy, and apologetics. These issues have not, however, received a satisfactory exegetical treatment. Theological frameworks have often been assumed but have not been defended adequately at the level of biblical data. Some Christians believe that God has established a system of natural laws and then acts inside of it in miraculous ways. Others believe that the very concept of natural law is misleading. They believe that natural laws are really only our description of how God normally operates. In this latter group, miracles are no more directly the act of God than is anything else that we interpret as being normal. Everything that takes place is equally an act of God. The goal of this book is to provide an exegetical study that is informed by philosophy, theology, science, and apologetics. Chapter 2. Summary of Positions, Models for God and the Creation. There are different ways of understanding both God and nature. Atheists deny the existence of God and believe that the universe exists in independence. Some atheists believe that the universe is largely intelligible to human beings, while others think that it is unintelligible. Deists believe that God created the world but does not act in it. Traditional Christian theism has maintained that God is self-existent and that the universe exists because He created it. There are a range of views in this model. Theistic naturalism maintains that God created the natural order, but then doesn't interfere with it in any way that is inconsistent with contemporary science. Providentialism teaches that God designed the natural order to accomplish His purposes, so that He doesn't need to specially interfere with it. In this model, everything is equally providential. Supernaturalism holds that God works through the system of cause and effect that He created, but that He also has the freedom to modify His creation and act apart from the regularities of the created system. Occasionalism denies any autonomy to nature. In this model, the laws of nature are nothing more than our interpretation of God's normal to us, way of working, and everything that takes place is willed moment by moment by God. Outside of traditional Christian theism, advocates of limited theism believe that God has either limited His knowledge and activity to accommodate creatures with free will, or He is ontologically limited and is growing with the universe. Chapter 3. The Options Within Traditional Christian Theism, Presented and Contrasted. Out of the models summarized in Chapter 2, only providentialism, supernaturalism, and occasionalism claim to represent the biblical position. Supernaturalism teaches that God created a web of cause and effect relationships that has a real existence, and that God's providence is accomplished when He, as the first cause, works concursively with and through the secondary causes that He has created. God is not limited to working through secondary causes, however. He has the sovereign freedom to act in ways that bypass or transcend the cause and effect relationships He has established and sustains. Like supernaturalism, providentialism teaches that God created the natural order and it fully depends on Him. Providentialists do not believe, however, that God ever needs to interfere with the created order. They believe that God only works through the natural system He created. Theoretically, every miracle can be understood scientifically. A miracle, therefore, is not a unique way that God acts in terms of bringing about His will, but rather it is an act of God that catches human attention and reveals God's power and glory. For example, the crossing of the Red Sea took place because a strong wind separated the waters. That wind was not a new creation of God, but providentially ordered to coincide with God's purpose in achieving a great salvation for His people. Occasionalists think that supernaturalism provides too much autonomy to nature. They see creation as occurring continually. God does not sustain the world, He recreates it moment by moment. There is no intrinsic power in the natural order, but only the working of God. A ball striking another ball does not cause it to move. It is only the occasion at which God moves the second ball. A miracle is, therefore, only something that occurs in the sense that God wills a new way of bringing about His purposes. Creation has no intrinsic causal power, so that every event is a supernatural one. Supernaturalists believe that we can study nature because it is objectively real and its causal relationships can be scientifically explicated. Miracles do not violate natural laws, but they cannot be explained on the basis of natural causal relations. Some events can only be understood as being brought about by the direct action of God in a way that natural cause and effect cannot explain. Providentialists argue that everything that occurs can be described on a scientific basis, and that special supernatural activity outside of the natural system does not take place. Occasionalists insist that everything is equally a supernatural work of God. In the latter two interpretations, therefore, a miracle is more about the observer's interpretation than about a new mode or God's working. Chapter 4. Some Hermeneutical Ground Rules. Although the Bible was not written as a treatise in systematic theology or philosophy, it is not illegitimate to analyze the Scriptures philosophically. Doing this, however, requires extremely careful attention to the writer's words, context, and intentions. When we communicate, we need to assume the existence of common sense. Authors and readers need to share enough common ground in terms of presuppositions and background knowledge in order for a message to be sent and received. Interpretations that seem to violate common sense should be rejected unless there are strong contextual clues that the message should not be taken at face value. When this is applied to occasionalism, it is apparent that the Bible simply does not speak in occasionalism's terms. In fact, what the Scripture says about nature and causes is very different from occasionalism. If occasionalism is the biblical view, then a common sense interpretation is wrong. Hebrew does not have a word that exactly corresponds to our word nature, but this does not mean that they lack the concept. The nature of something is simply the thing that it is, the properties that it has on the basis of what it is. A cause is something that produces an effect, or that helps produce an effect in conjunction with other causes. Causal power exists because the properties of one thing are able to produce effects in other things because of their properties. For example, a flame can cause a burn on my skin because of the interaction between the flame's properties and my skin's properties. It is common sense to talk about natural and causal relationships in these terms. Biblical terms for nature and miracles do not exactly correspond to our English definitions, but this lexical reality is not significant for this study. Chapter 5. Passages Dealing with Nature and Cause. Using a common-sense hermeneutic, there are passages in the Old Testament, New Testament, and extra-canonical writings from the same time period that teach that there is causal power in the natural order. This order is created by God and depends on God, and the causal power is something that He has imparted to it. But nevertheless, the causal power resides in the things that God has made. The things in the world relate to each other on the basis of their God-given natural properties. Some passages explicitly ascribe causal power to natural entities, whereas others imply it. The book of Proverbs over and over again makes observations about cause and effect relationships in nature and in human behavior. It assumes that there are real causal powers and connections in the natural world. Outside of Proverbs, there are numerous figures of speech, images, and parables in the Bible that rest on common sense interpretations of causal relationships in nature. The Bible both ascribes causal power to natural entities and also implies their existence by stating that things would have been different if the actual causes had been other than what they were. One example of this is in the biblical material concerning conception. The gift of conception is found in the will of the Lord, but it is the natural procreative power that God has given human beings that is causally responsible for normal conceptions when they occur. Jacob looked at Reuben as a sign of his strength and ability. David knew that his act had impregnated Bathsheba, and he sent Uriah to her so that the adulterous causal connection would be hidden. In biblical times, people knew what caused a pregnancy, and nowhere does the Bible correct this common sense understanding. There are some texts that may seem to favor an occasionalist interpretation, but they will be discussed in another chapter. Chapter 6. Special Divine Action. There are times when the Bible seems to describe what can be called qualitatively special divine action, where God acts in a way that goes beyond the natural causal powers that are found in nature. In the beginning, God creates all the world out of nothing, and since there are no natural powers for Him to use at that time, this work of causation is apart from nature. The conception of Jesus is apart from normal causation, since Mary had never had sexual intercourse, which she explicitly mentions when she asks Gabriel how she can be with child. Her common sense understanding was that sexual intercourse was the causal act for conception, which was also the understanding of Joseph when he was going to break off their relationship. The narrative and explanation surrounding the conception of Jesus teach not only that there is qualitatively special divine activity in the world, but also that this activity is recognizable against the background of common sense views of nature and causation. The historical resurrection of Jesus is clearly a special instance of God's divine power. During His life, Jesus did many things that people understood went beyond the power of nature. In Acts, Jesus' disciples were also empowered to do things that surpassed natural causal power. In the life of Samson, the power that he had was in addition to his natural strength. When the Spirit left him, he became as weak as any other man. The speech of Balaam's donkey was beyond nature. Special revelation bypasses natural cause and effect relationships. Daniel is not only given the ability to interpret the king's dream, but God reveals to him the dream's content in the first place. Prophets are given infallible information that can only come from God and cannot be figured out by any other means. Even the language of spiritual birth and regeneration shows a work of God that is apart from natural causal connections. Spiritual life comes from an external, supernatural work of God. The subsequent ability of believers to follow and serve God is also owing to His supernatural gift of power and competence. Chapter 7. Passages that seem to support occasionalism or providentialism, evaluated in light of their communicative purpose. Providentialists must maintain that nature exists, but there is no qualitatively special divine action, and occasionalists must maintain that created entities have no causal power or stand in causal relationships with one another. Colossians 1:15-20 and Hebrews 1:2-4 are often cited in support of providentialism or occasionalism. These texts clearly teach that creation is sustained at all times by Christ. But this does not mean that the creation that Christ sustains cannot have causal powers. Paul's speech in Athens in Acts 17 is also frequently cited, but again, there is nothing in this text that rules out creaturely causation. Jesus teaches that not a sparrow falls to the ground apart from the will of the Father, and also that the Father will provide His children with all that they need. In context, these passages are given to alleviate worry, and although they specify the Father's provision, they do not teach that this provision is apart from means. Passages like Psalm 104:10-30 that extol the work of God in and through creation are poetic. They are revealing that the natural, observable world is not all that there is. Behind the created order stands the power, purpose, and workings of God. This point, however, does not necessitate the occasionalist interpretation that there are no causal connections in nature. The same consideration is true for Psalm 139 that speaks of God's forming the infant in its mother's womb. When glory is ascribed to the Lord alone for victories, this does not mean that there were no secondary causes involved, or that the human beings who fought the battles actually didn't make any casual contributions. Chapters 8 and 9, Evaluation of Rival Views and Theological Conclusions. Occasionalists sometimes assert that the Hebrew mind had no concept of an independent nature and immediately ascribed all casual activity to God. This is misleading and inaccurate. Hebrews used the language of physical causation. The virgin birth is a miracle, as are others, precisely because they work outside of the natural cause and effect relationships that God has designed. Malebranche thought that texts should not be interpreted literally if they conform to a common sense perspective, but this hermeneutical rule simply cannot be sustained. Providentialists are often right that God brings about a wonder through the timing of rare natural factors, but this model cannot explain all of the biblical miracles, like the virgin birth. In order for occasionalism to be true, we need to reject a common sense interpretation of life and the biblical text. But there is not nearly enough biblical data to suggest that this is what we ought to do. God has created nature ex nihilo and sustains it with the casual properties and relationships with which He endowed it. A supernatural act is one in which God acts in a special way to inject some of His power into this casual web, bringing about something that is impossible on the basis of the natural properties and casual powers alone. Supernatural design in the natural world can be detected when there is a structuring of objects that goes beyond their inherent natural properties. The Bible is full of the record of special events that cannot be explained on the basis of pure natural causality. Even if natural processes can be used to explain the first 9 plagues in Egypt, the 10th cannot be so explained. They were still connected to Moses' activity, as was the crossing of the Red Sea, which was connected to Moses' staff. On Mount Carmel, Elijah's sacrifice was soaked with water to show that its consumption by fire went beyond physical properties. In the fiery furnace, the 3 friends did not even have their hair singed, while the guards who threw them in died from the heat. Examples could be multiplied, but the conclusion must be that the biblical record relates many instances of supernatural activity and design. How does prayer fit into this picture? There can be no doubt that the Bible teaches God's people to pray and to expect that God listens to their prayers. Prayer is one of the things that God takes into account in His providential designs. Believers pray, but they do not need to dictate to God the mechanism and means by which He answers their prayers. God can work through the arrangement of natural causal forces, and He can intervene supernaturally. We may not be in a position to tell whether something occurred because we prayed or because of natural cause and effect relationships, and thus the outcome would have been the same anyway, but those who are in a personal relationship with God can often tell if He has acted in response to their request. Chapter 10. Is the biblical picture viable today? Scripture presents certain signs and miracles as evidence for the activity of God and as authentication for the person and ministry of Jesus Christ. These acts, however, do not take place in a vacuum, but are interpreted on the basis of worldviews. Worldviews can shift and be replaced, and biblical miracles are presented as something that should lead towards the biblical worldview. Some theological determinists have insisted that God's creation must run on the basis of a full determinism, excluding supernatural intervention, but there is no reason why this view should be accepted. David Hume's argument that the testimony of miraculous events is always insufficient for rational acceptance has been highly influential, but is deeply flawed. Hume argues that the uniform testimony of history is against the miraculous, since history follows a uniform course of normal activity. He can only maintain this supposition by a priori rejecting the many, many claims for miraculous events in history. His argument also hinges on bare probability. He adds the number of non-miraculous events together, sees how much more numerous they are than the reports of miracles, and then argues that an event is always more likely to be natural than miraculous. This completely misses the point, because the question is not whether natural or miraculous events are more statistically common, but rather whether or not a particular event bears the marks of supernatural design. Postmodernism can be difficult to describe, but it rejects the modernist view that knowledge can be found through the scientific method. Postmodernists deny that we can know anything exhaustively, and therefore they assert that we cannot be confident in what we think is true. This philosophy cannot be sustained in real life. We are successful agents in living, and this requires an adequate, even though not exhaustive, knowledge of reality. If God acts in this world, why is there so much evil and suffering? It is vital that we recognize that God's sovereignty in the world is not a thesis that is discovered empirically, but rather it is a theological claim that is revealed. Although we cannot see God's hand or purpose behind many events, we do know enough of God and His ways with His covenant people to trust His greater wisdom, goodness, and purposes. Like a child with their parent, there are simply many things that we cannot understand, but we are at our most mature and rational when we trust. Chapter 11. Origins, Intelligent Design, and God of the Gaps. The Bible teaches that God created the world as a fitting home for human beings. It is designed as a suitable environment in which they can flourish. Creation consists of a web of cause and effect relationships, but this does not mean that everything in creation needs to be explicable on the basis of these natural relationships alone. When we find gaps in our knowledge, it is often illegitimate to appeal to the casual agency of God as an explanation, but if what we do know of natural properties and causation rules out a natural explanation, then it is not irrational or illegitimate to infer that they have been intentionally designed by an agent. There is no reason to think that physical causation must always be found for every phenomenon in history. We have no right to assume that physical causes will always provide a complete accounting. Not only is this the case philosophically, but empirically there are many serious discontinuities in the history of biology that do not seem likely to ever be explained through naturalism. In fact, some gaps are not due to ignorance, but due to what we actually know about how the world works. Scientists can study the natural order, but scientists are not warranted in making the metaphysical assertion that only natural causation occurs. Copyright 2015, Books at a Glance. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced, in whole or in part, without express written permission.